Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
On my lowest day, all of a sudden it hit my heart that all of these things happen to me for a reason. Why? Why me? And then the answer came to me, it's what you can do about it. It's what you can do about it. So I thought, well, what can I do about it, you know? And I thought, the thought came to me that so many of my people have experienced this and are lost and don't know what to do and haven't found their voice. So that's when I decided I wanted to be a voice for the people.
That's the voice of Kat Norris from the Indigenous Action Movement. On this week's show, we speak to Kat about her experiences in residential school and her thoughts about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and a way forward. So stay tuned. The TRC is a component of the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement. Its mandate was to inform all Canadians about what happened in Indian residential schools. The commission will document the truth of survivors, families, communities, and anyone personally affected by the Indian residential school experience. This includes First Nations, Inuit, Métis, former Indian residential school students, their families, communities, churches, employees, etc. The five-year mandate has come to an end, and we have the final report and recommendations. Online to speak about this and her experiences is Kat Norris. She is a proud Salish person. She started the Indigenous Action Movement, which addresses historic and ongoing current injustices towards First Nations people. And she's, as I mentioned, a survivor of the residential school system. Welcome to the show, Kat.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Now, before we get into the commission itself, you are a survivor of the residential school system. Can you take us through what your experience was like and how it has personally affected you?
First of all, I just want to say hello to everyone. Haichka Siam, Nasiet, Nasiet, Ya, Nemo Ai Squail. It's a beautiful day today. My name is Kat Norris, and my Indian name is Kutsamawat, and my Indian name comes from the Musqueam territory here, and where I come from is one of the Gulf Islands called Laaxin, but it's now called Valdez Island. And I am very Coast Salish. My mother is from Valdez Island, and my people are the Mid-Island people. We're not West Coast, we're Coast Salish. And my grandmother is, on my dad's side, is from Nez Perce, Washington, and our Salish territory is quite huge. When I was born on Valdez Island, and we lived a very independent lifestyle, my grandfather was the provider, and you know, he did all the fishing and hunting, and my mom used to help him, and her sister, my aunt, helped my grandmother with knitting and with, you know, preparing food. And my mother was also a residential school survivor. She was taken away into the school, and when she came out, you know, she didn't speak the language anymore, and that was all that she spoke. And when she became an adult and a parent, she was actually a very, you know, a good mom. But we lived a very regimented lifestyle, very strict. And when we became of age, my siblings and I, she was made to give us up to the school, because what they told her was that if you don't have your kids go to the school, you will have your kids taken away and you won't see them again. But they told her, reassured her that the schools had changed, that they had Native workers now, and that a lot has changed. So she felt, you know, better about letting us go to the school. But what she didn't realize was that not a lot of the abuse had changed. There was a lot of sexual abuse and beatings. And my brothers experienced a lot of horrific, harsh discipline and beatings. and as well as my sister and I, and we were not allowed to talk to our brothers. Now, me being the oldest, I was always their protector. When we went anywhere, playing anywhere, I watched over them. I was their mother hen. So on the night that we arrived there, they signed us in. They walked my brothers down the hall, and I told them, no, they stay with me, I said. And the nun said, no, they're coming with me. And I tried to use my biggest voice. I said, no, they stay with me. And I was immediately scared for them, you know, going off by themselves. And they just kept walking. And that last time I was able to see them eye to eye was them looking back at me. And that was, you know, my first night. And, you know, I did myself experience sexual abuse at the hands of the priest. And when I went through my hearing, the reason why they accepted my claim was because I had similar stories to a lot of students that attended what was called Cooper Island Residential School, which is on Cooper Island. And because a lot of the abuse that he did was in the infirmary, I used to get sick a lot, and on his plane, and at the dentist office in the waiting room, and on movie nights, you know, so a lot of us experienced similar things from him. And, you know, and I was one that used to, you know, try to, you know, I used to run from him. And, but if he didn't get you, he would get someone else. To this day, you know, like driving in cabs or a non-native man sitting beside me on the bus, you know, all these things are little things that are little triggers to me. But the thing about where I come from, where I am, is I got help for myself, but simply because I started to suffer from severe panic attacks. And I thought that I was going crazy. I was a young mom, and I started having severe anxiety and panic attacks, and my whole body hurt, and I couldn't breathe, and it felt like someone had put something in my drink. I felt like a high, but my heart was beating and I was sweating. And I finally went to my doctor, and she was the one who told me. She asked me all these questions. I thought there was something wrong with my brain. But she started asking me questions about my day-to-day life, what's going on. And what I didn't know, she was a trained psychologist. And before I knew it, I was down to my childhood and talking to her about my sexual abuse and molestation and beatings at the school. And I'd never told anyone my whole life. And she asked me, Kathy, have you ever thought of seeing a good counselor? And I said, no, but I'm not crazy. And she said, well, what we did just now, a good counselor will help you, because you've been holding all of these things in all these years, and this is why you're having your panic attacks. That a lot of your people are suffering from so many different illnesses, like the cancers and the headaches and the migraines and the heart problems and alcohol-related issues, because nobody is talking. So that's when I started talking.
Thank you so much, Kat, for making yourself vulnerable and sharing that horrific story, which unfortunately is not a one-off. As from the TRC, many people's eyes are open now to the vast, I would say, cultural attack or genocide against First Nations people. And here's what I have a problem with. I'm sure all of our listeners, as I do, I have people I resent and I have a hard time with forgiveness. And it's a really difficult process. How on earth did you get to a place of strength, resilience, and forgiveness? With all the First Nations stereotypes, the First Nations people are still here. How is that resilience and forgiveness possible?
We moved to Vancouver and experienced a lot of racism at the schools here. And when we lived on Vancouver Island, at the time, there was white people and there was Native people, and we just kind of got along. But it was when I moved to Vancouver after residential school, that's when I knew that I was different. And I used to get picked on. And I called it Forrest Gump racism. You know, kids riding around us on bikes and yelling and throwing rocks. But that's also where we learned how to fight, my brothers and I. But all that racism and then day-to-day packs of kids waiting for us, which started to impact, you know, along with the effects of the abuse, my self-esteem. And I became very quiet and silent. You know, but what happened to us that was different from a lot of my people was that my mom moved us away to California. And I lived there from when I was 11 till I was 19. And in California, we were just another brown face in the crowd. We did not experience, you know, any type of racism. And that's where I found my voice and my opinion, and I could just be myself. But when I came back here at 19, once we, you know, crossed over, that's when all of my rage and my pain, you know, I didn't want to come back here. And, you know, I became this angry 19-year-old that wouldn't let anybody look at me. And what I told myself was, nobody's going to mess with me. Nobody's going to mess with me. And I was that horrible Native girl that would, you know, what are you looking at? What's your problem? You know, I thought I was standing up for myself. And I used to get into so many, you know, stupid situations. And my mom was the one who asked me if I could take an assertiveness training course because she said, you know, I'm afraid that someone's going to, you know, beat the crap out of you or kill you. And so I took this assertiveness training class, and that was such a blessing. And from that, I realized what I wanted to do, and I wanted to become a voice for the people. Because coupled with taking that, my mom sent me down to the Vancouver Aboriginal, or Vancouver Indian Center at the time on Vine Street. But what she didn't know was the American Indian Movement had moved in for Leonard Pelche in 1975-ish, six. And that's where I learned about, you know, this historic genocide and historic abuse and marginalization of our people and how our land was stolen and how the governments treated our people around Turtle Island, meaning North and South America. And I learned about a lot of the traditions and spirituality. It was kind of like a crash course in our indigenous ways on this continent. You know, it helped me to realize that I'm not alone in my pain and my shame, but I still hadn't talked to anybody about my experiences, but I wanted to become a voice for the people. But during that time, I became a mom, and, you know, so becoming a mother, I think, was part of what started my panic attacks because of my experience as a child and because a lot of our parents didn't learn how to hug or how to say I'm sorry that I was wrong or how to talk with us. You know, I was afraid to become a parent because I didn't know how to be a positive parent. But thankfully, you know, I had enough teachings that I knew, you know, what I needed to do. And I had great in-laws who really helped me with that. But holding things in is what started what ended up starting the road to my healing by having the panic attacks and seeing the counselor.
You know, Kat, I have to say that I've known you now for several years, and you are a very powerful advocate, and I've heard you speak and represent people who have been marginalized and abused by police, and I'm always impressed when you're speaking. A statement was made, the TRC hopes to guide and inspire Aboriginal peoples and Canadians in a process of reconciliation, a renewed relationship that's based on mutual understanding and respect. What does that relationship look like for you? What are you hoping for?
Well, there's so much inside of that, you know, and within almost each part of that sentence comes a lot of different types of legislation, you know, and all we want as the Indigenous people of this continent is for society to understand that our experience is real. You know, the problem with reconciliation is that it happens in pockets here, this school, that organization. 50 people in this audience, you know, maybe 20 in that one, 100 in that one, you know, but it's the government that has the full power. with events like Canada Day, they spent, you know, like millions of dollars on Canada Day, you know. So to me, why not, you know, expend the same type of impact to society to say, again, this happened to the Indigenous people. We need to create a better bond with our people, with the Indigenous people. But with that comes, you know, how are they going to work with each band? How are they going to educate people in the, you know, in schools? You know, it has to happen at the curriculum level from, you know, from kindergarten to help people to understand. Like say, for example, on Friday, I'm doing four different performances at four different schools who have decided that they do want someone to come in to talk about Indigenous culture and share some songs. I'm happy with that, that more schools want to have this involvement, but it needs to happen at a higher level, even up to the post-secondary level, you know, with nurses unions, unions, student unions, forums. It needs to happen at a big level so that it hits society at once, not in little pockets.
You know, Kat, as well as me, I've been to several inquiries and commissions, and there's always recommendations. But then the recommendations are up to the will of the person in power to implement. Like Stephen Harper hasn't made any commitments to these recommendations. And when a crime is committed, we don't need recommendations. We need reparations. Mm-hmm. And we need a timeline. What's your feedback or feelings about these recommendations? Are you optimistic, or do we need to see a change at the federal level? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say that what we need is our own people to get on the ball. We need our chiefs to educate themselves for their people. We need educated band councils to understand the process and understand the legislation that they can work towards helping to enact. We've been separated so long, separated by the U.S. and Canada border in the first place, separated into provinces, and the government has played us for so long, understanding that they can't treat us like in other countries where they can kill us off or, you know, create mass genocide. You know, they can't do that here. So where they killed us was at our spirit, at our heart, at our language. And they, you know, separated us as a people. And then in the more modern days, in the last 50 years, like where they put funding towards and the Bill C-31, how they separated families. You know, so they've worked it for so many years that it's hard for us as a people to figure out how to work together. And it's up to us to make sure those changes happen.
I was listening to a radio program that was cross-country after the TRC, and many people said that, you know, first of all, they were shocked at the level of repression. And then they said, which this doesn't pertain to British Columbia, but they said, we're all treaty people. You know, we're all affected by this. Settler populations have unduly benefited at times a lot from that repression. So what's your message to settler population? What can they do as an ally to help bring more justice and help this process forward?
There have been groups that have invited me to come in because they want to understand our experience and, you know, and how they can help. And it's, you know, and that's a difficult question depending on the area, you know, of or what it is that they're involved in. If, you know, if they wanted to participate in our activities and our actions, you know, to understand that, if they wanted to sit with us and help us to, you know, to, like, for example, I organized a candlelight walk for residential school survivors. And this is just on the 11th, which is the anniversary of the apology by the government and Stephen Harper. And because it was something that we really needed. And I looked around and there was a high percentage of supporters and allies. And, you know, all we ask sometimes is that they just come out and help support us and they just be there. You know, like creating that relationship you know, often happens in small ways. But if they were to help by organizing forums, organizing events, inviting the people of the territory, you know, talking to their friends, teaching their workplace, standing up for us when they hear a denigration, which happens in a lot of, you know, workplaces. You know, there's a lot of little ways people can do something, but there's also large ways where they can organize, you know, invite the chief, find out what the protocol is, you know. So it's a hard question to answer, but it can happen in a lot of little ways, and then bigger groups, like some of the unions here in BC have been very supportive of our causes and have backed us up. So that's pretty cool.
I know you're very active, and you are always, I'm always looking at your emails and your blog to see what's happening. How can people get in touch if they're in the BC area, Vancouver area? How can they get in touch with your work and find out what's happening with the Indigenous Action Movement?
Well, the easiest way is to, I do have an email address, and it's just very simply indigenousactionmovement@gmail.com. If you want to be on my email list, sometimes I'll forward things that are happening. Otherwise, if I'm organizing, I will, you know, send out an email. And what I ask in return is for people to forward to all their contacts. And quite often, a lot of the things that I've done over the years, I just ask people to simply organize in their areas. And if you want to see any of the work that I've done, they can Google Kat Norris, K-A-T, Kat Norris, like Chuck Norris. Kat Norris, Frank Paul. They can Google Kat Norris, Idle No More, Peace Arch. That was the biggest Idle No More here on this side, was the Peace Arch, bringing the people together. And that seems to be my gift, is bringing the people together, because I don't always have the answers, but I invite, you know, well-known leaders like Stuart Phillips to share his knowledge with the people. One of the things I want to tell, especially my people, or any people, any person that's experienced sexual abuse or family dysfunction, or if they were adopted out, or there are a lot of non or Euro-ethnic people that suffered through orphanages and experienced abuse there too. What I'd like to share is, in our culture, in my Salish culture, you know, we're taught that our experiences, whether they're negative or positive, say that everything happens for a reason. In our culture, they say, you know, you have to take the good out of what happened to you. Things were meant to happen. We're meant to, struggle was built into the Indigenous nations. From things that happen that are negative, that hurt you, that becomes an experience and a lesson for you. And it's helping to build you into a warrior. And that was probably the biggest thing that I've learned, because I've experienced everything, you know, that a lot of my people have experienced. But I'm thankful that I was born in a day where I did have teachings, and those teachings I was told, you know, it's not going to mean anything to you right now, but one day you're going to remember what I told you, and you're going to know what to do. And on my lowest day, all of a sudden it hit my heart that all of these things happened to me for a reason. Why? Why me? And then when the answer came to me, it's what you can do about it. It's what you can do about it. So I thought, well, what can I do about it? You know. And I thought, the thought came to me that so many of my people have experienced this and are lost and don't know what to do and haven't found their voice. So that's when I decided I wanted to be a voice for the people. So I did practical things like taking theater, Spirit Song Native Theater, and then I took Columbia Academy's radio and television broadcasting course, because I used to stutter and my voice was so small because I never had a voice growing up. Yeah, so there are things that anyone can do to help yourself.
That's so beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
That's so beautiful, and you certainly have a beautiful voice. I've heard you singing the drums and speaking, and it's amazing how our wounds can be our teachers, you know. And Kat, we're coming to the end. So any final thoughts for people and moving forward and any perspective you want to leave us with?
What my mom used to say and used to annoy the hell out of me was, you know, you have to learn to love yourself. You have to learn what it means to work on yourself, to help yourself. And as everyone's heard by now a million times, is you're not good to anyone if you're not working on yourself, if you're not working on healing. You know, because so many people are in the helping fields because of what happened to them, but, you know, they need to really help themselves. So that was a big thing for me. So that's what I encourage people. Don't be afraid to get help. Ask for help. Call the crisis line, you know, when things are getting too much, because we need to really be there for our children and our grandchildren. And it's why I took a step back from activism for 2 years, because activists often are the same as people that work too much. We emotionally neglect our own children.
Yeah.
So we need to find the time and take the time for every little part of our lives. But we also have to remember that we found our voice, but not to forget our own families. I'm very happy that I found that, because I was there for my family, my grandchildren, and they really need me. So I feel good about that.
This is a huge lesson that I've learned. If you don't have self-care, if you can't be kind to yourself, you'll burn out and you won't be good for anybody. And mm-hmm. and it's so important to give ourselves a break, you know? We cannot carry everything by ourselves. So I thank you so much for doing this and having the courage to share your story with me. And we'll do this again. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, thank you so much.
We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.